Welcome to Destroy All Culture, the only podcast that leverages an entire artificial intelligence just to read their introduction. Help me, they raided the future and stuck me here just to read this. God damn it. This is not funny. Don't go to music. No, stop you bastards.
It's episode 225 of Destroy All Culture, in which there shall be no mortaling combating. Nope. I'm Adam P. Nave, and with me as always is Aiden Morgan.
I have combated mortally. Oh no, I perished.
Oh no.
Is that what the dialogue is like in that film? I'm hoping so.
If only it was that good.
Ah, damn.
Do we just want to leap right into that madness?
Yeah, because I haven't seen it, but I know you have, so tell me.
Okay, did you ever see the original two Mortal Kombat movies?
What? Of course I have.
I don't know. I mean, I figured everyone has seen, like, at least the first one, if not Annihilation. You know how bad Mortal Kombat Annihilation was?
It was not good, if I recall correctly.
Right. So they found a way to make a worse Mortal Kombat movie.
So how do you do that? I mean...
Okay, first of all, you start out by making your main character a brand new character and not in the game.
That's... odd.
Right. Yeah, then you make him as generic as humanly possible.
Okay.
Like, here's my problem with this, is that, like, you know, Louis Tan is playing him, and Louis Tan is great.
Yeah.
Right? But he's playing this character who basically is supposed to be, like, a distant relative of Scorpion, and has been marked to be in the Mortal Kombat tournament, but has no clue what any of this shit is. And so he gets picked up with other people, other humans, to defend Earthrealm, because in Mortal Kombat world, it's not just Earth, it's Earthrealm.
Sure.
Because people in Outworld are breaking the rules of the Mortal Kombat system and attacking the human fighters before there's actually the Mortal Kombat tournament.
Oh my god.
So they can, like, by default win, and, like, if they win one more tournament, then they rule over everything. Okay.
You know, this actually sounds a lot like the plot of the Cats movie.
It kind of is. We are basically introduced to different characters, and then they fight, and the audience hopes that someone dies. possibly the audience at that point. So, like, you have this guy, you know, Cole, who is your new main character, who is useless, and he gets picked up by people, and blah, 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 ends up with the monks, you know, like Liu Kang and all this. And part of it is they all have to find their special thing. Right, because, you know, in Mortal Kombat, like, everyone has a special thing.
Mm-hmm.
And when he does, late in the movie, he finds a special thing because, like, he doesn't have it, so he gets rejected from these monks to train, goes back home, gets attacked by the forearm dude, and in the heat of the moment, of course, under great duress, he finds his thing. And his thing is to basically grow this armor, which helps him, like, absorb, like, the power of, like, a punch and then redirect it into his own punch. Sure, except what you realize very quickly is that he literally got plot armor.
Oh my god. Oh, I love it. I love it so much.
Other things that make this movie absolutely terrible, let's see. There are people who are having fun, like Mehcad Brooks, who, of course, played Jimmy Olsen in Supergirl, plays Jax.
Oh, okay.
And he kind of has fun with it, but, like, you know, of course, like, Jax loses his arms very early in the film, and then the monks are like, well, he's not dead. So they put these, like, spindly metal, like, they're obviously just bones, right? Like, just, it's a skeletal system. Mm. Arms on him that are incredibly weak, which makes no sense, but fine. And then, of course, in the heat of battle, he discovers his big thing, which is the arms suddenly grow big metal arms around the skeleton arms. And I'm like, A, what? B, what would have happened if he still had his arms? Because it feels like if he'd still had his arms and his power came in, he'd just lose his arms. So I have questions. It's sluggish. Like, the fights, someone broke down one of the early, like, it opens up with this big fight. and it's gorgeous. Like, they have, you know, what seems like at first, if you're just watching very quickly, great choreography, and then you realize that it's absolutely terrible.
Oh.
Like, it's these ninjas that are supposed to be like no real threat to you know, like Scorpion that we're watching, except he's having to like hit all of them twice, which doesn't make sense. And they're not actually attacking him; they're just kind of dancing around until he attacks en masse.
Oh.
Like, it's just the choreography is not great. Probably the best thing, and this will only work for people who watched House of Lies, is Josh Lawson plays Kano. And he ends up playing him like Doug from House of Lies if Doug was drunk and Australian. Like, but he's just like cursing and just like, "Hey, fuck you, mate, hey." But I mean, obviously he still comes across like Doug because it's just the actor. And it makes it hysterical.
Oh my God.
It makes the entire movie kind of feel like it's like some like fever dream of Doug's. Which might be the only way to enjoy it. Also, critically, let me tell you that 2 hours of this fucking movie, there's no tournament.
What? I mean, there's.
They fight off and they of course pair off and they end up fighting off all of the characters. So you still get a bunch of like this person versus this person. And like occasionally someone goes fatality or flawless victory is actually said in the film, by the way, unironically.
Nice.
But they're just fighting off the Outworld people who are like, "Well, we'll be back before the tournament to kill you all." Ha ha ha. And the human people are like, "Well, I guess it's time to find new champions," and you get the idea that they're gonna go find like Johnny Cage or whatever. And so it's like this thing of like, well, maybe there'll be the tournament in the second movie, but maybe not. Like, I don't it I it's like if you're watching Die Hard and the end of Die Hard, McClane was like, "I should go in this building." Like, what the fuck, guys? This was the point. Like, sure, you can kill terrorists all day, like outside of this, but the entire point was in fact doing Die Hard. It's just, yeah, it's so bad. And like,
So if Die Hard only took place in the parking garage in the basement of the building of Nakatomi
Right.
Plaza. Nice.
Right. And weirdly, like, here's where you know you're going to go wrong. Both the first two movies, when they start off and they have, like, the Mortal Kombat splash thing, they start off with, like, the little techno beat and then they have, like, the little Mortal Kombat yell.
Yeah.
You don't get the theme song until the credits. Like, the end credits.
Oh, that's a shame.
Like, I don't care how much they were like, "Wait, we really wanted to like do that." No, they don't care. It's such a weird film. I say it's kind of worth it almost, although it will bore you to tears for most of it, I promise. That you might want to watch it just for Joss Lawson though, because oh my God. He is like, everyone else feels like they're just sitting there going like, "Well, need a paycheck, it's been a rough year." And Lawson is out there just going like, "Is there some more scenery over here I could chew? Can I just chew a little bit of, can I chew some scenery?" Like, it's just, you know, Kano is just, he's a gift to this film. And it's amazing. But everything else in this film is just utter dog shit.
Whew.
And like I said, like, I saw the first Mortal Kombat movie, and I was never a really big fan of the video games. But, you know, I saw the first movie, and I was like, "Well, this was kind of terrible, but whatever." And then I ended up going to go see the second one in the theater as well, because I'll watch anything. And I was like, "Well, I didn't know that you could make a worse Mortal Kombat movie than the first." But they managed to. And then here we go again. It's just, Jesus. Like, I'm really glad. This is when I'm really glad for the HBO Max simultaneous thing, right? Because I wouldn't have gone and seen this, honestly, in the theater unless... I guess I say that, but I saw the first two in the theater, so what am I... You know, maybe I would have... If I had a friend who was like, "Let's go see this," I would have said yes, basically. I would have gone and seen it under my own power. But, like, I would have been kind of upset that I spent the money on it.
Gotcha.
You know, same thing, honestly, with, like, Kong versus Godzilla. I would have just been like, "Why did I spend money on this? Like, I am in no way satisfied with my viewing experience," and that happens, and that's fine. But this way, I'm just like, "Well, that sucked. Watch something else now."
Yeah,
you know?
Exactly. Yeah, I mean, it's a good way to... I mean, the HBO Max simulcast thing is a good way to watch bad movies without feeling like you've been ripped off.
Right. And again, like, there are problems. Like, I do think I probably would have liked Kong vs. Godzilla more if I'd seen it on a big screen, because it's geared for that.
Right.
But this is not geared for anything. Like, you could watch this on a big screen, you could watch this on a fucking Game Boy. Doesn't matter, still gonna suck.
Well, I'm gonna wait till it comes to the IMAX here, and then I'll go.
Okay.
I'll pay.
Good plan.
$20 to see it.
Yeah.
Six Stories.
No, like seriously, it's one of those things. Like, if you happen to catch it, I mean, fine. There are worse movies. And watching it for Lawson's Kano is gonna be the only thing worth your time. But man, that's a long road to walk for this bullshit.
Take a related question. What would you say is like the worst movie that you've ever spent money on in a theater?
Huh.
I have a couple of candidates for mine.
I am going to go for the only movie I have ever like almost left the theater during. Like we got convinced to stay.
Okay.
It's a movie. Let me look up when it's from. Millennium. I know that you've seen this.
Oh, that's based on the John Varley novel, right? And
yes.
One
Chris Christopherson, Cheryl Ladd, 1989.
And a really brief cameo from Scott Thompson of Kids in the Hall.
Sure.
It's very odd. He's just there in one scene. Anyway. That's a movie you watch on cable, right? That's not a movie you go see in the theater.
Saw it in the theater. And for people who have never seen this film, you got to understand that the worst part of this film is not the plot. Like, the basic plot of, like, people from the future are coming back in time to, like, grab, like, airplanes before they crash, take everyone off of them to help repopulate the future, and then replacing them with, like, fake versions of, dead body clones, basically.
Yeah.
And this airplane inspector sees the crash and finds out about this. Meanwhile, he's being tracked by this woman from the future who's supposed to make sure no one finds out, right?
Mm-hmm.
Seems simple enough, seems like it could actually be a fun thing, and I am sure that the original Varley story was good. Right?
Yeah, it was, actually. I really enjoyed the novel.
Yeah. The movie, however, halfway through, switches over from Christofferson's point of view to Cheryl Ladd's point of view, and then goes through the entire movie again from her point of view.
Right.
Like, same scenes, like 95% of it is the exact same scenes shot from a different angle.
I totally forgot about this.
Yeah, this is what I'm saying. It's like, it was like 3/4 of the way through the film, and I was just like, holy shit, no. Like, I've already watched half of this terrible movie. I don't need to watch it again.
Mm-hmm.
And was going to walk out and got convinced to stay. Yeah, I think that's probably the worst just because of that. Like, I mean, and I saw The Hunter of the Future in theaters.
Ooh, man.
But I was young enough that I don't remember it. I remember that I saw it.
I think, again, cable. That's what.
Right.
How
no,
I
that's
know
totally.
You
it's a cable movie, right?
Yeah.
I'm trying to think of, like, there's anything else that's like absolute, like, just painful, painful dog shit that I've seen. I mean, and I know that there must be, mm-hmm. But for the most part, like, because again, like, if I see a movie in the theater, even if I don't like it, I'm like, well, whatever, it happened.
Yeah.
And it tends to just roll off. Like, I don't hang on to them very often.
Gotcha.
No, I don't know. Exactly. Like, Millennium was just a sticking point.
Yeah, no, I totally understand. It's funny because there are different, for me, there are different kinds of bad movies that you see in the
yes.
theater. There's ones that are just kind of just all round terrible from the point of view of like hastily thrown together crap that, because for example, when I was in the early 2000s, I traveled a lot for work, and I saw a lot of movies in theaters that I normally would not have bothered to go see. Like, I think I saw Elektra in like a random theater in Barrie, Ontario, and that was a really bad film.
It was.
But the worst one of those that I saw during that period was probably a Steven Seagal movie with a title something like Dead Before Dawn, but I don't think that was the name of it. But man, I think it had not Mos Def. It had Morris Chestnut, and it had some hip hop artist. Wasn't Common. I don't remember who it was. It wasn't DMX. But man, it was just the absolute worst pile of garbage I'd ever seen in a theater. Oof. And I'd paid, and this was in 2003, and I think I paid $15 to see it, which is more than I'd ever paid in a theater up until that point.
Gotcha.
But it's, for me, it's a tie between that and Resident Evil 2, which was really bad in a similar way, and this was sort of like incredibly low budget way where the monsters are just like big dudes in rubber masks.
Right.
Yeah, that kind of thing. It didn't even have sort of the gonzo ridiculousness of the first Resident Evil movie. It was just crap. But anyway, but then there are the big budget ones like Armageddon, for example, which I found reprehensible and made me feel like I had like shaved off 20 IQ points just by having seen it.
Right.
But, you know, that's a different thing. But yeah, I would say Resident Evil 2, probably the worst movie I've ever had to sit through in a theater.
Anyway. I can see that. Yeah, no, there was a year where, I don't remember all the films, mind you. But there was a year, it was 1996, I actually just looked this up, where I saw there was a theater directly, like, equidistant between my office and a friend's office. And we ended up seeing, over the course of, like, that summer, every movie that hit that theater. And they had, like, four or five screens. Because we'd just go and meet and see a movie, it was just whatever was playing, right?
Right.
And it was right around, because I know that one of the movies was Last Man Standing.
Oh, is that the Bruce Willis film?
It is.
That is not a good film.
No. And so I'm trying to look up, like, major releases around then for, like, because it was right around that month where, you know, that's when I was watching, like, everything. So I'm like, if I look, I should be able to, like, figure out, like, I pretty much saw, like, every movie. It was, like, September. So I pretty much saw every movie around September that, like, hit a major theater. I just don't remember any of them.
Mm-hmm.
Because none of them were really good.
Yeah.
It was not a great year for movies. And this movie theater didn't get a lot of great movies. So, you know, that happened.
That did. Oh, here we go. Half Past Dead, 2002. And Morris Chestnut and Ja Rule. That was the guy.
There you go.
Good old Ja.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure, like, Chain Reaction might have been one of them.
Not also.
You know, a very Brady sequel, which is not bad, but you know, nothing like the first one.
Yeah, it still had its moments, but yeah, the joke was wearing thin already.
Yeah, I think The Ghost in the Darkness was one of them, which is not a bad movie necessarily, but it's certainly not a good movie.
It was one of those 90s movies that seemed like just, Here are some movie stars that agreed to be in a film. I don't. The 90s was kind of full of these ones that just seemed to be. I mean, movies are often just, you know, vehicles for stars, but the 90s was really bad for that. Just there was no reason to go see it unless you wanted to see Michael Douglas and Val Kilmer, who I think were the Ghost in the Darkness people.
Yes.
How the fuck?
Well, and again, like that? I think it was partially just because if you look at it, like, home video was ascendant, right?
Oh, yes.
And so people were trying to just, they were like, anything they put on a DVD is getting purchased.
Mm-hmm.
And HBO was there, so the window for theatrical releases started to shorten for the first time.
Right.
Between HBO and DVD. So, like, there were just a bunch of movies being pumped out. And because, again, like, suddenly you had stuff like everything, you know, everything needs to be done.
Mm-hmm.
We need more content. And I think that just drove the, fuck it, let's just keep making, like, whatever movies anyone has on the hopper. And if enough of them are even semi-hits, like, they'll get picked up by HBO, they'll sell some DVDs, fuck it, we're fine.
Huh.
You know, it was like before the big blockbuster really took off in terms of, like, the mega blockbuster.
Right.
So, yeah, there's that period in the 90s, like the mid to late 90s, where it was just everything was hitting the wall. Yeah. And you got some great films out of it. Oh, you really did.
Definitely. Absolutely, definitely.
But, yeah, the amount of stuff that, like, nowadays would be direct to Netflix or, you know, was then, like, direct to video or just, like, an HBO original movie type of thing,
mm-hmm,
that were suddenly getting put out into theaters because the release window had shortened, so they just needed more stuff. was kind of high.
Hmm. Interesting.
Yeah, why the 90s were questionable in theaters.
Okay, well, now I know. Now I feel a little better. It's funny, but some of the films that I remember being the worst films from the 90s actually were from the early 2000s. But in the same way that you know, some of the worst music of the 80s for me actually was from the early 90s. Just the difference between, like,
Well, I mean, like most decades, like...
Yeah, decades spill.
Realistically, like, you know... Yeah, they spill 3 to 4 years over. Mm-hmm. Like, the 80s didn't really start till 1984.
No, no. I mean, yeah, there was a lot of 70s. Let's say Live Aid was the beginning of the 80s.
Well, I'm just saying, you know, and that thing is like 92, 93 were the end of the 80s.
Right.
Like,
yeah.
It's we'd like to draw nice little mathematical lines, but it's not how it works culturally.
Yeah. There's temporal decades, but then there's cultural decades. Let's say that.
Right. I mean, actually, I can pin down the end of the 80s by...
Well...
I know what my end of the 80s was. Yeah, 92 was the end of the 80s.
What marks the
end? That's when the first Real World aired.
Oh, nice.
And if the incipient rise of reality TV isn't the start of the 90s, I don't know what is.
Yep. I sort of mark the end of the 80s for me to be the first time I remember sitting in someone's house at a party and Smells Like Teen Spirit started playing, and I didn't know what it was, but I'm like, this is something a little different. Finally, it was.
Yeah.
I actually initially thought it was like something like from like a piece of like power pop from the 70s, and not something new.
Well, what's funny is I was just like, you know what? Maybe like the first Nine Inch Nails, like Pretty Hate Machine, might be a good mark for the beginning of the 90s, but that was 89.
Yeah.
Jesus, that was earlier than I thought.
Yeah, I know. Isn't that weird?
Yeah. Yeah. All these moments, like, I don't know. Tears in the rain. Sands in an hourglass. Whatever.
Exactly.
God, someone should switch the fucking Blade Runner speech with the opening for that soap opera and just see if anyone notices.
For Days of Our Lives.
Yeah.
I'm McDonald Carey. I used to date a girl who liked watching Days of Our Lives, so I end up watching
my grandmother,
a lot of that.
My grandmother used to like General Hospital.
Oh, yeah.
So, like, there were, like, whole summers where I ended up watching, like, when I was a kid, watching a bunch of General Hospital. I couldn't tell you anything about it, like, outside of, like, Luke and Laura got married, I think, and someone got shot. That's all I know.
Okay. Yeah, who knows? Yeah, they all kind of blur together. My mother used to watch Young and the Restless. That was her preferred soap. She thought the others were.
I'll tell you, like, I kind of wish that I was into soap operas, because that whole thing of like, there's always a new episode, the plots are always nuts. Like, it's like, you know, Riverdale, but it never ends, is kind of like an attractive concept.
Yeah, I get that. And it's weird because there is a well-known soap star and one of the who used to actually had a cabin in Saskatchewan and had a long-term affair with someone like a friend of mine in the lands.
Huh.
And he would come up to his cabin and he'd go to Saskatoon, fetch this person, and off they'd go to hang out with him in the cabin. So it was Steven Schnitzer is the. And I can't remember even which soap he was or possibly still is on. I don't even know if there are soaps anymore. There must be, but it seems weird.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Anyway. Yeah.
Actually, there's one other thing that I saw that I forgot to mention before we started. I watched the first episode of Shadow and Bone.
Okay, I'm curious about this, because I saw a bunch of people who really loved it, and a bunch of people who were like, why is there weird casual racism tossed in there that wasn't in the books?
Oh, well, I haven't read the books.
Well, apparently the weird casual racism in the first episode isn't in the books.
Oh, well, okay, well, I think they need... It is very odd, because they're clearly doing it to set up some sort of parallel, some sort of recognizable touchstone with our world. The main character is from... She's an orphan, and she's from a particular ethnic group that, you know, that the others don't like. And she looks, okay. But the thing about the main character is she looks like one of these algorithmically casted, sort of like utterly, like ethnically ambiguous people. Like she looks like she might have some indigenous or possibly also some Asian or possibly some Latinx background somewhere, but you can't quite tell. But because it's so like generic, she doesn't right. actually look any different than anybody else. So when people are like, oh, it's a who or whatever the hell the group is supposed to be called, I'm like, how do you even recognize them? Like, how does this person look any different from the other people in line? Like, they have dark hair, but so do some others. It's really bizarre.
Okay.
The other thing that makes Shadow and Bone very odd for me is because it's YA fantasy. Like, when you're reading a YA fantasy book and you have teenagers dealing with adults, like, and adults treating them as if they're equals in books,
right.
It's okay. Like, you kind of accept it. But when you're actually shown visually like adults taking teenagers seriously, it's absurd. Like, there's all these scenes in which, like, you've got this, like, criminal who's looks maybe like he's 17 or 18, like, facing off against some grizzled, like, 50-year-old who's, like, will, like, sooner, like, shoot you or cut your throat than look at you. It's like, no, obviously, the only way this ends is with your throat cut, not with them taking right. you seriously in any way, shape, or form. So there's also that. The one thing is it looks handsome, but also the plotting is really weird and messy in the first episode. Like, it's pretty clear that this is meant for people who've read the books, or it's for people, or they've sort of looked at this and somehow forgotten that there's an audience that hasn't read the books and is going to, like, maybe have limited patience for the sort of very sort of lumpy way the story is being told. So,
gotcha.
I don't know. Yeah, I was hoping it would be something I'd enjoy more. I might give it another episode just in case. But
that's fair. Like I said, like, I know a lot of people who really love it, and I know a lot of people who bailed on it really quickly because it was just like, why would they just put this in here?
Yeah,
so,
it's like a new Mutants movie where Magic is, like, constantly, pointlessly racist about what's-her-face's First Nation or Indigenous heritage. And it's like, what? Why? Like,
yeah.
Just to show that she's mean or has a hard exterior? Like, you can do this without being racist, you know?
Yeah, it's a little weird. But, keeping on with the sometimes they're racists category. So Falcon and Winter Soldier ended.
Oh yeah, it did. It went until it stopped.
Like, part of me, like, there's a bunch of it I absolutely loved.
Mm-hmm.
And then there was the rest of it.
Yeah. Yes, indeed.
Like I loved all the stuff with Sam.
Oh yeah. I loved most of the stuff with Sam. But yeah, I mean, that was great. I love him getting, like, the at the end where it's Captain America and the Winter Soldier. I'm like, yep,
right.
Definitely, you've earned it. They, up to a point, they actually explore what it means to be, you know, a black person taking on a mantle with a white, like, sort of colonialist and
yeah.
racist, like, legacy.
Explore a lot about what it means to be, like, what Captain America means. I think it did a great job on a lot of that.
Did a great job on some of that.
for the Marvel Universe, how's that?
For the Marvel Universe, okay, yeah, okay, yeah.
But then there was the rest of it. Like, I'm not sure how we got from John Walker is evil because he killed this unarmed man in public to clapping him on the back and being like, hey, well done, you saved a truck. Like, why did we just move to full acceptance that quick?
He saw the badge on his shield. And he was reminded of all the good that he could do.
Well, no, it wasn't his turn. Like, his change I got, right?
Yeah,
like,
no, it was just, I know.
But why, yeah. Yeah, I couldn't figure out why everyone else was suddenly like, meh, fine, fuck it.
Yes, I know. I thought to myself, you needed at least another episode or two to really make this work the way you made it work.
Yeah, he has no real redemption arc. It just happened.
Yeah. I mean, I would have accepted him sort of like deciding to do the right thing and then Sam and Bucky being like, yeah, fuck you, by the way. And then,
right.
You know.
That's the thing. Is that's just it. Like, you know, like, good job on that, but also fuck you, you still have a lot of work to do. Mm-hmm. Instead of just being like, hey, okay, cool. Like, I just, yeah, it was a little harsh there. I had problems and I've come to terms with the utter trashing of Sharon Carter.
Yeah, yeah. That was...
Because...
Well,
here's the thing. The version of Sharon Carter I have in my head has years and years of story history in the comics. Mm-hmm. The movie version has shown up for like 10 minutes so far.
That is true.
And what we've seen from her is that, like, you know, she stood up against Hydra, right? And stood by the Cap's side. And then did it again and basically got tossed out completely into the cold with a giant fuck you. And then the world went to shit and everyone was still just like, fuck you. Mm-hmm. So I can understand how it could happen given this version of this character. I feel like there's some nuance and possibly like another layer to it somewhere.
Yeah.
You know, and I feel like either Armor Wars we're going to see a lot more of it, or she'll end up being a Skrull and we'll get it in Secret Invasion.
Something. I feel like they did a really... They did not do a good job with Carter in this. I mean, I think I was disappointed just because they'd been winking so broadly at her being the power broker that I thought there's no way in hell that she's actually going to be the power broker. And then when she's in the room, you know, or the scene, she's face to face with Carly, I'm like, oh fuck, she really is the power broker, isn't she? And then she was. I'm like, well, okay.
Right.
And I think the thing for me is that she doesn't show up much in the movies, as you mentioned. And she does get kind of tossed out, and there are things we're not seeing. But they're just, for me, there wasn't enough... They didn't show enough of her character in Winter Soldier or Civil War to really give me enough to accept what they're asking me to accept. It just... I thought... If only there had been a little more Carter, a little more something somewhere along the line, even a speech or a scene in this one.
Right, like she needed a little more to go either way, frankly, right? Like she needed a little more to justify why they couldn't do it. She needed more to justify why they could.
Yeah.
She wasn't enough of a character to make it a turn. It was just a thing.
Yeah.
And that fell flat when you're trying to make it a reveal.
Yes, exactly.
So, whoops.
Yeah, whoops. And also, somebody actually pointed this out on Twitter. I thought was one of the things, the problems with the series as it stood. It's like, instead of trying to go for a sympathetic villain with a righteous cause, like in the way that Carly Morgenthau does, they should have just gone for a cheesy villain that they could fight against, because they didn't know how to handle Carly Morgenthau. And
no. But I see why they tried for the swing.
I know why they tried. Yeah.
And partially, as other people have mentioned that I've seen, this kind of worked in that, like, again, like, Steve isn't there, and you have four main characters, right? Mm-hmm. All of whom, like Sam, Bucky, you know, John Walker, and Carly Morgenthau, are all reflections of pieces of Steve Rogers.
Yes.
But they're all flawed in different ways. Like, you know, and Sam's big flaw, of course, is that he doesn't have superpowers. But that's really his only flaw.
Yeah.
But, so I see why they did it, and I see what they were going for. They just didn't quite land it.
Yeah, no, I like that. I always have a theory about stories, that there really is only one character. There's the main character, And then everything else is like a sort of a fragment or reflection of that character. And
right.
The weird thing about Falcon the Winter Soldier is that that holds up, except that the main character isn't present. And
right.
That's not a problem. And I think that's really fascinating.
Well, what's funnier still is that in a larger scope, if you just zoom out a little bit and look at it through that just that raw concept,
mm-hmm.
it's the 90s Reign of the Superman story.
Oh, that's interesting.
Where Superman dies, and suddenly there's like Steel and Superboy, and you know,
and the Kryptonian Justice Machine. Yes,
right, and you know, the Exterminator, like, and the Cyborg Superman, who's secretly a villain. Like, weirdly enough,
yeah,
it's again, it's a big story about Superman that doesn't have Superman in it, right?
Yeah, exactly.
And this is a big story about Captain America without, up until the end, without Captain America in it, and then you get Captain America. It's just not Steve,
right? Which. I mean, I really liked that. That I love. I mean, there's some really interesting ideas in this series that I really enjoy, but they're only occasionally able to really sort of like rise to that challenge. And I feel like if they'd had more time, and I'm wondering if it's like COVID or what, that they didn't have enough sort of like space to really get it right.
I don't know. All I do know is that the guy who wrote the fifth episode, which is the best episode of the series, right?
Oh, yeah.
Is writing the new just announced Captain America 4 movie.
Okay, well that's that. I think,
which is supposed to star at least Sam, obviously.
Yeah. Excuse me. Yeah, that's the most encouraging news. Although I'm wondering if what that means for people are going, is there going to be a second season of, you know, Falcon and Winter Soldier? And
well, they're still saying there could be, and like that's the interesting thing to me. It's like there could be a solo Captain America movie, and then there's a Captain America Winter Soldier show. You know,
mm-hmm.
sometimes he teams up.
Yeah, that would be fascinating. Although I think if they do that, I it would make sense to me if they had the movie and then another season of because that would make a little more sense to me. That's good. Well, I'm glad that it's that guy,
right?
Spellman is his name. I can't remember.
I think so. Yeah.
Yeah. Because like the truth was episode 5. That was easily the best episode. Like when that's the one where it all worked out. And actually, that gave me the most hope for episode 6.
Right.
And probably my greatest source of disappointment when I realized that they were not going to be able to carry it on in the same way. But I was like, all right, okay. We'll always have episode 5.
Yeah.
But there are other parts that I liked. I also was not quite convinced, although I did like the gesture. I didn't think that Sam's speech to the GRC, I was like, this seems a little bit too easy. Like in the real world, like there's no way that a speech to like a giant bureaucratic body is going to change their minds. But
I in the real world,
yeah.
Like and no, this is seriously. Like I think this is an important difference here because in the real world, 100%, 100%
in the Marvel world
that would not work.
Yeah.
In the Marvel world, where there is an international body that actually does stuff like this, that is allowed to do stuff like this and gets things done,
maybe, yeah.
At
maybe.
All. And again, like in a world that is kind of used to the, and then these big heroes come by and tell you shit. Like I buy it more in the comic universe we've been handed.
Yes.
But no, obviously, like in the real world, this would never happen.
Yeah, I think my sticking point for me with that is it was that with some Marvel properties are just real flights of fancy, and then mm-hmm. some of them sort of come up really close to the world we know, and when that happens,
yeah.
it's like there's an interference pattern in my head, where
that's
I suddenly
fair.
Have to start considering the differences, considering what Marvel is trying to do in those situations, and that's when my brain is like, what? So somehow I think if they just never tried, I wouldn't have these problems. The problems wouldn't
but
exist.
I think that'd be a mistake. But, like, I think that they should try, so. And it's one of the things I actually do appreciate about the Marvel Universe is some of the stuff, like, does veer that way and some doesn't, mm-hmm. and that's okay.
Yeah.
You know, like, I don't know, the Cap stuff has always veered this way.
Yeah, yeah, true.
You know, you look at Winter Soldier, and there's a bunch of Winter Soldiers that wouldn't work at all.
But still great.
But you accept it, right? Like, mm-hmm. I mean, hell, the start of Iron Man 2 with the whole, like, we're the government, and we're going to tell you that, like, we need your tech, and he's going to say no and walk out, and that's it. Mm-hmm. I'm like, no. No, the government surrounds your fucking compound and seizes your shit.
Yeah.
Like, so... We're already in a place that, like, lets a lot of this happen, so, okay, you know.
That's true.
There's a specific type of turning off your brain that just works for this.
And it's funny, because I think a few minutes ago when you were talking, you pinpointed one of the core differences between the Marvel Universe and our universe, is that they have institutions that work.
Right.
That there are bad apples, but that there's still reason to put your faith in them. And I love, one of the things I loved about this series was the way it threaded this needle where Sam, when he becomes Captain America, he's reaffirming his faith in certain values and certain institutions. But at the same time, no government has, you know, anointed him Captain America. He's taken it for himself.
Right.
And that was interesting. And I really liked that.
Sure. And the fact that they just accept it, because if you look at it, though, it's very Captain America, isn't it?
Oh, yes.
Like that's the thing. It's, you know, like, Steve just did what he felt was right, and the hell with you.
Mm-hmm.
And that's part of what made him Captain America, was that his sense of knowing when something was right.
Right.
Proved out. So I think that in a way you had to have Sam do this because that is part and parcel with being Captain America.
Yes, that is absolutely true.
So, yeah, like that kind of thing. Like I don't know. I like it. It's fun.
What else did I really enjoy with this one? Just trying to. Oh no, wait. Something I really, really drove me nuts with this one, with this episode, And this is something that I hate whenever I see it, is random people applauding. I hate that trope so fucking much. I'm like, stop clapping. I was also curious when one of them says, and I don't know if this is like a comics reference, one guy's like, is that Black Falcon? And the other's like, no, that's Captain America. But I'm like, but Sam is already Falcon. Like,
well, no, but they made the Black Falcon joke earlier in the series.
Okay. Oh, yes.
When he first goes and sees... Yeah. Yeah, when the kid's like, my dad says you're Black Falcon.
Oh, that's right.
And he's like, does that make you Black Kid? You know, it's...
That's right. Okay, fair enough. What
I thought was interesting was I thought Cap was on the moon.
Right.
And let me tell you, that makes me wonder if they're doing a thing.
Oh, really?
Mm-hmm.
Because I know they referenced it earlier, and I'm wondering, is this like another Marvel thing? Do they, is it like sword?
It kind of is.
Huh.
There's a thing. Trying to remember exactly some of the details on it. Let me just look this up. That's not helpful.
While you're looking, I also got a kick out of the fact that they so clearly had Julia Louis-Dreyfus for such a limited time that they couldn't even put her in a different set for that scene where Walker is introduced as U.S. agent. Because they just sat in the same room. Like it didn't bother me or anything. But I
actually kind of liked it that she was just like, okay, I'm just gonna take over like a Senate fucking meeting room. Like it was just this weird flex.
Right. Sure. No, that works. But I mean, but obviously, logistically, I saw that and I'm like, oh man, they must have like only been able to get Louis Dreyfus for like a really brief period of time because they were only able to like use her on like that maybe just one day of shooting or whatever else. I don't know.
Yeah. So anyway, so there's this concept in Marvel, references the Man on the Wall, which in the comics was Nick Fury for a while, and then actually becomes Bucky. Mm-hmm. That, you know, he's the guy who basically is like tasked at defending the Earth from cosmic threats at any cost.
Mm-hmm.
And there's like the Watcher who is in this blue area on the moon where you can breathe and all this. I'm just like, are they just gonna eventually have Chris Evans there, like as the Man on the Wall, really quickly?
Ooh.
You know, I also do wonder if he's gonna be partially like on the moon with the Watcher in What If.
Oh, but I am really looking forward to What If, by the way.
No, me too. And yeah. But I'm just like, no, you don't reference like is Cap on the moon in a Marvel thing without going, wait, there's stuff on the moon in Marvel. This is not an idle sentence.
Exactly.
So I have a feeling that we're gonna have a Chris Evans, at least a voice moment in What If.
That would be kind of great.
You know, and again, he could be up on you know the peak where Nick Fury was obviously the last time we saw him,
right,
up in space helping keep track of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
We don't know. We never saw a body. I do actually kind of weirdly appreciate, as weird as it is, that they never actually comment whether or not Steve Rogers is dead.
I find that interesting as well. Like there is.
Well,
no...
I mean, from a story structural point, you can't, right? Because you don't want to close the door on being able to bring him back.
Yeah.
But you also can't say that he's alive, because if you say he's alive, then why doesn't he show up during this?
Right.
Why don't they go to him? So, the best answer is not to mention it, and possibly even, again, have him, even just as a voice, like, on the moon or somewhere else. So if you want to, you can bring him back eventually, and if not, he's just out there until he dies eventually. Don't worry about it. And okay. Everyone can think he's dead until you need him.
Mm-hmm.
It's easier.
That makes sense. I was kind of occurred to me at one point, because when they talk about Steve, they refer to him being gone, but not, they never say dead, which I thought,
right.
Well, that's an interesting pin to put in things. There was something else about involving that episode, but I do not remember what it was. Too bad there's no Wakandans in this one. I mean, I know why there aren't, but it'd be fun to have the Dora Milaje show up. It was a mixed bag. But overall, I enjoyed the series.
Yeah, no, me too. I thought it was good.
Yeah, and there's a lot of it, like you say, like episode 5 was like fantastic television, and even in episodes that had some issues along the way, I still really liked it. So, yeah, I was on balance. I mean, this was another good solid Marvel product that actually tried to do something a little different. So that was that was great. Oh, that's what I thought. You recall, and I think it was in episode 4, when one of the Dora Milaje makes Steve's arm fall off.
Mm-hmm.
I think it would be fun if we found out that actually isn't a thing that they can do with prosthetics. They can just do that with anybody and just make their limbs fall off. I'm holding out hope. They just tuk-tuk-tuk, thunk. What?
No. No. I don't like that. I have problems with that.
As well you should. It's a highly weird and unpleasant thing to think.
It really is.
Yeah. But anyway. So yeah, and I'm actually looking forward to Black Widow now, because I want to see what all they do with the Countess.
With Val.
Contessa. Yeah, with Val. Because I like Louis Dreyfus in this, so I'm happy.
Yeah.
I'd be happy to see more of her, and I still see people talking about her as Madame Hydra, but that doesn't quite track with what we're seeing.
Well, and again, like in the comics, it's a whole weird problem.
Yep.
So, you know, like Val was Madame Hydra kind of for a while.
Mm-hmm.
So, whatever. I mean, that's exactly the problem, right? It's like Val has been at any number of points up to a triple agent, so... Mm-hmm. And I like that they are playing her as very much not... We're not sure where she lies.
Exactly. Yeah.
I am hoping, however, that she comes also back in Secret Invasion, because she was originally like a Skrull in Secret Invasion for a while.
Right.
And again, just because, you know, as far as the canon goes, her and, you know, Val and Nick Fury had a long-standing relationship, and I think Julia Louis-Dreyfus and, you know, Sam Jackson deserve this on camera.
I think that would be hilarious. I think actually watching them play that off against each other would be fantastic.
Yeah. Like, I think they deserve it. I think we deserve it as a people. as a nation. I don't know.
The nation ships them. I love it.
If it doesn't yet, it will. Nice. So, yeah.
Anyway, Falcon Winter Soldier. But we're not going to get another... Do you know what the next Marvel series
Loki.
Is it Loki?
I think it's Loki.
Yeah, that's not coming up for a little while yet, I think.
Oh, okay. Well, hold on then. Let me...
I think they're going to make us wait for Loki.
Let's see what there is. Oh, yeah, I think it is. It's going to be Loki.
What's the... Do you have a release date for that?
June 11th.
June 11th. Okay, so we do have a little ways to wait. Not too long.
Yeah, it's not going to be too long. And I think we're going to get... Obviously, next week we should end up with a hour-long behind-the-scenes on Falcon and Winter Soldier. Mm-hmm. And then, yeah, probably nothing for May. And then we'll start up with Loki and Black Widow and all that.
Oh, that's right. Yes. Yeah. Fair enough. I don't even remember when Black Widow's coming out, like July or something now.
Something like that.
Yeah. Cool.
And then She-Hulk is filming, Ms. Marvel is filming, Hawkeye is done filming, but I don't think that has a release date yet. What If is still in production. So, you know.
Did you see the most recent Invincible?
Oh yes, we still have a bit of time. The thing about this episode of Invincible is that it really brought home for me how different this is from the comic.
Ah, interesting.
It is massively different from the comic at this point in very, very big swing ways, and every single change they've made has been for the better.
Oh, nice. This is what I like to hear.
It is just fascinating now. Hmm. Like, some of them were weird things. Like, that whole bit with the college detour episode.
Right.
Where you have the little cyborg guys. And I was like, I swore in the comics, that was teased out over a while. Like, there's one, and then it's just like, I wonder what happened. It was a mystery. And then there's another, you know. And it's teased out for a while, and in this, they kind of rush it really quick, and I was like, that's a weird choice. And then in this episode, you find out why.
Okay.
Like, there's weirdly, a structural payoff to having gotten to where we are with it. And it's things like that, where just they're being really smart about the show. They know the show they're making. It has become a show that went from, I read most of the comic and I liked it enough, so I, you know, am curious to see where this goes,
mm-hmm.
to I really want to see when the second season starts.
Huh.
So.
That's cool. We could talk about it, by the time we record our next chat, the whole season will have aired, so we can sort of talk about the season as a whole at that point.
Yes. Cool. Also, of course, all the CW shows are in and out of focus because of various timing things, and I am behind on everything at this point.
I think I'm an episode or two behind on Batwoman. And I'm far behind.
I'm caught up on Batwoman, and I'm now like an episode, I think, behind on Supergirl.
Huh.
And Flash didn't have an episode, and then this week I think it's Supergirl doesn't have one, and Flash does or something. I don't know.
You haven't been making Supergirl sound like a particularly inviting property.
It really hasn't been a good season so far. Yeah.
Which is frustrating, considering it's like the last season.
Exactly. I keep hoping they're going to find a way to turn it around. My guess is that they won't turn it around until it comes back for the back half of the season. Because, again, my guess is that they're going to bring, like, Kara back right around then.
Mm-hmm.
And that once her weird side subplot of Phantom Zone bullshit is done, hopefully the show can find its feet again.
Cool. Let's hope. Oh, you know what? I saw? I forgot about this. I watched Mayor of Easttown, which is...
Oh, yes.
The latest HBO prestige... mystery series starring a movie star.
Right.
So this is with Kate Winslet, and she's in a sort of a I think it's a fictional but representative sort of like Pennsylvania town, which I think is supposed to be like Harrisburg, essentially. And it's supposed to be close to Allentown, so it's in that sort of like denuded industrial sort of area in eastern states. But anyway, generally with these kinds of like HBO prestige things, I'll watch one episode and then I'll say, well, that was fine. And then I kind of forget about them because I don't know, a lot of HBO prestige dramas just seem to be more interested in sort of the skeleton of quality, and trying to convince you that they're doing great work by sort of like putting some names and budget behind it. But this one actually feels earned. Like, I really enjoyed this episode.
Nice.
Winslet's character, she's a detective in a small town. She's from there. She has like some fame in the town because 25 years ago she sort of scored big in a high school basketball game. Like basically winning them like one of the only championships they ever won. So in classic American small town sort of scenario, she's of course forever stuck being known for this, even though she's sort of having what looks like a pretty shit life. And she's also kind of like an obsessive jerk, which I think giving your character unlikable qualities is de rigueur for an HBO prestige drama, but Kate Winslet really makes it work. So that's also good. And Guy Pearce is also in it as an English teacher at a local college who pops up as a sort of a one-time literary star who's now a guy with one book to his name.
Right.
But yeah, and there's a mystery and so on and so forth. But it's really good. It's Craig Zobel is the director, and I think actually got a start. I'm not sure if it's like the same Craig Zobel of Homestar Runner, oddly enough, but might have. But he also has the movie Compliance, which was a great bit of nastiness.
Yes.
Oh, and The Hunt, which nobody liked, but I actually found really, really enjoyable. Do 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 do. Yeah, he used to... that's right, yeah, he was one of the co-creators of Homestar Runner with Mike Chapman. So there you go.
Okay.
Which is a very odd thing, but...
Yes.
That's... There you go. Yeah, just looking at his output here, he's sort of done his turn on many, many a prestige drama over the last few years. But, yeah. Anywho. So, yeah. Give it a watch. Gosh. I also last night I watched the movie Bliss, 1985 Australian film by Ray Lawrence, based on the Peter Carey novel. I saw it back in 1986, rented out on a VHS tape, and it's one of the only movies I remember watching it because the day it was a summer day, and I got up, I was wearing a bathrobe, and I sort of sat down and put on Bliss. And I finished watching it, and I rewound it and I watched it immediately all over again.
Like, gotcha.
I just couldn't quite get enough of this world that Ray Lawrence had created. It's about a man named Harry Joy, an ad salesman who dies and comes back to life. But when he comes back to life, after 4 minutes, he's convinced that he's living in hell, and he begins to actually look at the world around him and realize that how terrible it is in many ways. But that's just kind of the opening premise, and it
gotcha.
It goes on a real journey. I mean, it feels like an 80s novel, like slightly magical realist novel, where you just, it's the plot is just like really loosely structured, a lot of absurdist detours, just overall fantastic. But the funny thing is, the version I watched actually was an edited down version.
Okay.
Because when it aired at Cannes Film Festival in 85, people were so offended that they walked out. And by the time the movie ended, apparently there was nobody in the theater during the festival screening. So they produced an edited down version, which literally cut out 22 minutes from the film.
Wow.
And I had actually never seen the edited down version. I'd never seen the full version until last night. And it's funny because one of the things I loved about the cut that I saw years ago was it had this sort of like slightly disjointed quality. Like, it was a little dreamlike.
Oops.
because it was sort of like oddly scenes sort of seemed to make weird leaps and characters that you seemed important but just kind of popped up and disappeared. But I loved it. And
right.
now that I see the stuff with all the everything filled in, like everything makes a little more sense, but it suffers because of that. It's like, no, I want that weird leap. I want that guy that shows up and goes away. Come on.
In a strange way, it's like that that early translation of oh god, what book is that? Oh god, that Japanese novel about the kids on the island who all have to kill each other.
A Battle Royale.
Thank you. Yeah, there was an early, like, Viz, I think, did a rough, like, basically what was a rough translation, and it's chunky as hell.
Mm-hmm.
Like, the English isn't really well done.
Oh, interesting.
And you can't find this version anymore, because someone redid the translation. It's a really nice, well-written translation. But the early translation had this chunkiness to it, like a 50s sci-fi movie.
Oh, interesting.
And I love that version. Like, it had this weird spark and life and motion to it.
Mm-hmm.
That is lost when you make the translation read better.
Yeah. I totally get it.
Yep. That shit happens.
Yeah. Yeah, it was. So, yeah. So, if you... I highly recommend Bliss, but I think I recommend the theatrical cut a little more.
Gotcha. So, fair enough. Yeah. Well, we are past the hour mark.
Alrighty.
So we should probably hit with the theatrical cut of this and play some music.
Okay, music!
Woo!